Welcome to the Hype Leadership Podcast. David and Lindsay Curry are dynamic entrepreneurs focused in high-performance leadership and coaching in sales and service. Through the Hype Leadership Podcast, David and Lindsay strive to serve in your journey towards a high-performance life. And now, here are your hosts, David and Lindsay Curry.
Welcome to Hype Leadership Podcast. My name is Lindsay Curry, and this is my wonderful, wonderful co-host, David Curry. We are extremely excited and honored to have our special guest today, Mr. Scotty Elliott. As Chief Distribution Officer for Health at AmeriLife, Scotty Elliott oversees a growing network of more than 50 independent health and life marketing organizations, a distribution group that has more than doubled in size since 2020. In his role, he leads AmeriLife's Medicare and simplified issue verticals along with its direct-to-consumer distribution channel. Scotty joined AmeriLife in 2019 and was named President of Life and Health Brokerage Distribution in 2020. Before that, he served as CEO of One Life, a life and final expense insurance provider, where he led a comprehensive transformational that included a full rebranding, improved governance, and a strategic push into new markets. He holds a bachelor's and master's degree from Mississippi College. Welcome to the podcast, Scotty.
Wow, it's such an honor and a privilege to be here today, Lindsay and David. Great to see you guys. Humbled that you had asked me to be a guest, and super excited to talk about leadership today, one of my favorite topics.
Yeah, nobody better than yourself that I could think of. So, you know, you bring that humility already to the show. But yes, we are certainly honored that you are here, Scotty. We appreciate it. Bringing you back to your roots, Mississippi College. You know, we may talk a little bit about that past and where you come from, how you got here today. So I'm excited for that story. As our listeners know, we like to theme these shows or ask our guests for quotes that have meant something to them through their journey and kind of something they've gone back to over the years. So Scotty blesses us with this quote that I do love, and I will read this for us. It is, "Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. It does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails," from the beloved Paul the Apostle. Scotty, I love that quote. Again, no pun intended by that, but you know, it was a couple conferences a couple years ago that Lindsay and I had the blessing of listening to CEO of Dolly Parton's organizations, Joel Manby, who wrote a book, Love Works. And I know that, so, you know, we usually go straight into what is that meant to you? And I know it's, you know, pairing the business world and the value of love doesn't always seem to be the easiest. You know, maybe when you think about the manager role versus a leader role, now love comes into leadership much more than maybe it does managing. But when you think about how that has applied to your, I guess, journey, your career, what would you speak to with that?
Yeah, sure, David. And wow, so appreciate the opportunity to expand on that. It is a powerful quote. It's an enduring quote inspired by God. You know, it's almost 2,000 years ago, Paul penned that to the church at Corinth. And I think it's got ready application, not just in the professional realm, but in the personal realm as well. And the two of those, I always say, are inextricably linked. You know, as a leader, you can try to compartmentalize, but I don't know that that ever ends well. So, you know, what it means for me, if I had to encapsulate my leadership philosophy, I think you nailed it today with the title, Lead with Love. And the Apostle Paul, you know, when you think about him, he was truly an amazing man. He was mission-minded. He was purpose-driven. He had a massive why that he was ultimately willing to die for. And he was dealing with a lot of headwinds, as we like to say in business. He was dealing with a lot of adversity, immense challenges, and then ultimately a lot of division within the respective churches that he was a part of planting. And I think that that was what spawned him partly to write this church to Corinth. He was dealing with division. And what he penned here, I believe, to be a perfect formula for leadership. You know, he also went on to talk in terms of what you should clothe yourself with. He said, clothe yourself with compassion, humility, and gentleness. And he encouraged people to forgive each other and to live together in perfect unity. And so when I think about leadership and what we contend with on the daily, a lot of times we're, you know, dealing with division, with headwinds, with adversity. People are contending with pride, with jealousy, with envy, which is at the root of the division. And I love how Paul, you know, encourages us to, you know, live with kindness, you know, clothe yourself with compassion. Don't envy. Don't boast. Don't be proud. Don't dishonor others. I believe in the business realm, if we would just do these things, it would be amazing to see not just the qualitative outcomes, but the favorable quantitative outcomes as well.
Yeah. You know, as I listen to you speak that, I think, and I'm correlating all that to leadership and business, right? And, you know, we always say your best leaders are the people that have the greatest followers. And most of that following comes from true humility and authenticity. And I love the Maxwell quote, much simpler: leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. And to grow true trust from somebody, you just have to have that true compassion, right? So, so true. So true. There's not a greater value to put at our core than to love with others, to be authentic, and to not be scared, right? That we were another conference I'll reference real quick, Lindsay, and I just attended. It had, you know, your Sean McVays and Dabo Sweeney's, who was the guy, Billy Donovan. I mean, just all these greats, the Mac Browns. You know, you're a football guy. You would have absolutely been in love with this room. And then there was kind of this outsider. You may have heard of him, Jim Rome, right? It's been all over. You know, Jim is that media guy. And later in the day, somebody posed a question to Jim, and he said, what's the greatest, what has impacted you the greatest? And I truly feel this was authentic when he said, you know what, this room has impacted me greater today than anything else has in my life. And he said, the reason why is because you have the alphas of the alphas in this room. But you know what they've told us all day long is they've told us about their struggles and they've told us about the challenges. And McVay spoke to 2 years after he had won the Super Bowl and reached these great pinnacles of his, you know, industry, that he was ready to hang it up because of the struggle he was dealing with. And you don't get to see that, right? Social media doesn't post our struggles. Social media doesn't blast the challenges that you probably face day in, day out, to walk into that 20-second limelight that everybody then sees and thinks, man, it's so great to be Scotty. You know, man, it's so great to be in this seat. Man, they've got it so easy. But the reality is that's never really the case, right? It's never easy. You get to these places because of the hard things and the adversities that we faced. And I want to kind of bring that out today. So I know that we've kind of prepared you for that. So I appreciate, you know, the honesty, the humility, the authenticity that you'll bring to us and share with us about your journey. But I kind of question, because I've heard you tell your story about how you were coaching football and, you know, this guy approaches you and he's a president of this big organization. And next thing you know, Scotty's the president of this large One Life IMO, leading all these 1099 entrepreneurs. And when you talk about that, you talk about maybe the jealousy, the envy, the things that some people on the other side of that could have looked to you at in that position. I imagine there were some challenges that you were faced with. And I was just wondering if you went back to that spot, talking to us about how you worked through that and maybe earned the respect of some of those people that may looked at you differently at that point.
Yeah, no, that's great, Dave. And before I go there, and I think it's appropriate, first off, I believe you and Lindsay were at John Gordon's training camp. If I'm tracking with the individuals you just highlighted, I think Tim Tebow might even have been there.
Yeah, Tebow was there. I saw on your LinkedIn, your good friend Jordan Montgomery was our MC for the event. It was
Just to be in that circle, I think is impactful. And I commend the both of you for getting around leaders that you aspire to be like. I think that's so important. And you mentioned Dabo Swinney, who's one of my favorites too. His energy is palpable. And talk about a guy that's authentic. And that loves, in fact, that's a mantra of his. When Clemson captured their first national title, I well remember the post-game interview when he said, you know, love was the key. Those guys in the locker room loved each other. In fact, he's quoted as saying, you know, the key to coaching is love. It's not knowledge. It's not discipline. He said, if you love them, you can discipline them. Yeah. If you love them, you can yell at them and laugh later. And that's so meaningful. And I relate to that. And when you talk about coaching, that was my preparatory ground. That was a career path, you know, that I was on at a young age. God had different plans. And so as a result of that, I was in Meridian, Mississippi. I was coaching high school football. I was the offensive coordinator at a school there. Teaching and coaching and trying to be impactful every day with the giftings that God has given me. And I coached a young man, Daniel Parker, whose father, you know, owned a large prominent agency in the final expense space. And he recognized something, you know, in me during that football season and essentially plucked me off the gridiron, recruited me to come in and be his succession plan, if you will. And he was at a pivotal moment in the business. They were dealing with a lot of challenges. And I think, the idea was twofold. Number one, he had been, you know, leading the charge for some 30 years and was ready to take a little bit of a step back. And then number two, infuse a little bit of fresh leadership into the place because they were in the need to take some course correction measures. But to your point, I was 27 years old. All I had been doing up to that point was coaching football. And so inevitably, it was going to be a challenging post, to say the least. And I wasn't popular with all of what would be the associates there. They were kind of scratching their head thinking, Ken, what are you doing bringing this guy in?
27.
Wait. Yeah, 27. I mean, I was young. I was inexperienced. And I was stepping into a very difficult situation. So it was kind of a trifecta challenge there. And so what I did to get through that was a fewfold. Number one, I leaned on my faith. I trusted my assignment. And I think that's so important because, you know, I was, you know, trying to walk with the Lord. It's a prayerful decision. And so I believed with all my heart I was where I was supposed to be. I trusted my assignment. And so I knew that irrespective of the outcome, I was where I was supposed to be. And, you know, certainly, you know, you think about in Jeremiah where God says, for I know the plans that I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. And in Romans, he says, and we know that for those who love God, all things are working together for your good. And so I had to lean into that and know that each day when I walked into the One Life America home office, you know, I had faith that I was where I was supposed to be. So therefore, I wasn't worried about failing, so to speak.
Yeah.
Second thing that I really attempted to do in the vein of authenticity, which you bring out, which is so important, you know, I was like, I'm going to hang my hat on a lunch pail mentality. Number one, I'm going to be honest with everybody. Number two, I'm going to be hardworking, and I'm going to seek to be empathetic, right? And so I acknowledge people's concerns. I didn't run from them, but I didn't buy into the narrative of this guy, you know, is going to be out of here in a few months. You know, we're going to chew him up and spit him out. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's young and it's inexperienced. I just acknowledged that objection on the front end and agreed with it. You're right. I don't know what I'm doing. I am young and I am inexperienced. But what I do know is I'm where I'm supposed to be. And I believe in the giftings of leadership that the Lord has given me. And I'm always going to be honest with you. So when you ask me a question that I don't know, I'm not going to tell you, make up some kind of answer. Just to tell you, that's a great learning opportunity for me. I'm going to be very hardworking. I'm going to lead by example. I'm going to roll up my sleeves. I'm going to arrive early and leave late. And I did that while I was there. And then I'm going to seek first to understand that I'm going to abide in a set of core values that are my non-negotiables. And you can trust me, you know, with that. So that was important. And then thirdly, I would say, you know, what I did was I surrounded myself with capable leaders that were experienced, that were knowledgeable, you know, where I had deficiencies that I couldn't overcome, you know, certainly on the immediate front. I sought to bring in a group of trusted, capable leaders and empower them, equip them, and endorse their leadership. And I tried to make the strategy of One Life and the day-to-day leadership be a collaborative affair. And I sought to drive consensus with that group. And look, we made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. Those are learning opportunities. But ultimately, I'm now some 17 years in this business and still consider myself a relative newcomer in our industry. But I've tried to ascribe to those same things that got me through that early time and every post that I've had since then.
Well, and it sounds like, Scotty, you know, there's a quote by John, and this, you exemplified it. It talked about feeding your faith and starving your fear, right? And so you putting that armor on of God and feeding, like, okay, I'm at the right place, and praying for endurance and strength. I'm sure that was part of it, right? Because you don't know exactly every day what you're walking into, but if you have that unwavering faith, that's what gets you through situations that you can't see what's going to happen day to day, but that faith that keeps you progressing. So,
I absolutely, you nailed it. I think that's critically important, and it's not easy, you know. Yeah, and that's, you know, why we have to be surrounded by people that are going to breathe life into us, that are going to encourage us daily, that are going to hold us up in our times of weakness, that are many. But you're right. I mean, that's really was the foundation of my success. There was this constant reminder I would preach to myself, you know, that I'm where I'm supposed to be. So when I would get these thoughts in my heads of you're not worthy, you know, you're too young, you don't even know what an IMO is. I remember when I first got there, I'm like, I'm the president of one of the largest IMOs in the industry. I still don't even know what the acronym truly means. Yeah. These were the doubts that I would feed myself. And then I would be like, wait a minute. Like, God didn't put me in this position to fail. And so I know that I'm where my assignment. And then you get to what your why is and what your giftings are, and being in that purpose-driven zone daily that replenishes your energy. Because I think when we abide in our gift zone, that allows us to persevere and persist without exception, because it refuels us. When we get out of our gift zone, that's when we swiftly lose our energy.
Absolutely. It's really doubling down on what your strength is, right? Doubling down on that. And like you said, hey, getting leadership around where I might not be as strong, but they can help equip me to continue to move forward, especially in the business. So let me ask you this. So along your journey and your career, what have been three of your greatest leadership lessons that you've learned and that you've continually kind of gone back to and relied on?
Yeah, so that's good. Goodness, and I'm continuing to learn every day. So this is at a I guess, a time and place as of today, how I would answer that question. Things that I'm really kind of honed in on by way of leadership lessons, I would say, number one, humility is key, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you think about humility, the real definition of humility is a modest or a low view of one's own importance. And so notice that I didn't say a modest or low view of oneself, rather their importance. And so we shouldn't, just because you're humble doesn't mean that you're not confident. We should abide in confidence and be able to recognize that what our unique gifts are, what our strengths are as a leader, and drive confidence from that. But we shouldn't think too highly of our importance, right? And everyone is replaceable. And when we are in our calling, as I said earlier, you know, that we have this, our fuel is our purpose, and we should seek to pursue that every day. And when we do that, everything else tends to fall into place, and you can render positive influence to those around you. And the other thing I would say, when you're not humble, and you were talking about this earlier, David, you know, people pick up on selfish motives. Yeah. People are discerning, right? And so, you know, when your intent is not good and it's all about self-promotion, you're really not going to engender a followership. So I would say humility is key. We aren't as big of a deal as we think we are. And remember, people are generally concerned with themselves anyway. It's just human nature. And so our focus should be meeting them where they are and attempting, you know, to relate to them, encourage them, inspire them to be the best versions of themselves. The second thing I would say as a leadership principle, you know, that's important to me is take action. Successful leaders are willing to make decisions and take action. And unsuccessful leaders are afraid to make decisions for fear of failure. And in order to do this, you have to get to a place where you understand how to deal with inevitable failure. And failure has to be viewed through a lens of opportunity. What can I learn from this situation? How can I refine my capabilities through this failure? Because the more you contend with failure by taking action, the less overwhelming it becomes. And on that note, there's a great quote from a guy named W. Clement Stone. He's the founder of Combined Insurance, squarely in our space. He said, "Thinking will not overcome fear, but action will." Great leaders are great decision makers. And half the battle is a willingness to take action. So I would say humility is key. Take action. And then number three, and this is, I'm a major work in progress on this leadership principle, but listening is more important than talking.
Oh, yeah.
You know, James said, we should be quick to listen, slow to speak. And I think that's so important. It's a great quote. We have to be, as leaders, quick to listen. How can we be effective decision makers if we don't listen? And there have been so many times in the course of my life, in the course of my career, where I just spoke too soon. And it made me look stupid, and it rendered, you know, poor outcomes. But I would say, you know, that we have to be great listeners. And great listeners are also great observers. They have, you know, this ability to be very observant, and they've refined their discernment as a result of being a great listener and a great observer. And they've learned also who to listen to and what to listen for. And they're adept at observing trends and traits because they aren't solely, you know, bent on their agenda, which leads to better collaboration, better teamwork, and ultimately better consensus, which you're trying to drive as a leader every day. So I would say, again, just to reiterate, you know, humility is key, take action, and listening is more important than talking.
Yes, it is. I mean, dude, you're writing the playbook, man. You're writing the playbook. And you know, the more that we dive into this space, right, the leadership space, and we've already gone all the way back 2,000 years ago to Paul. And as I've heard others say, and I believe, you know, the greatest leader to ever walk the face of the earth was Jesus Christ himself.
Amen.
You know, so even when you go back that far, I think there's all these different ways we can say things, but we keep saying the same thing. You know, and it's like what you said about your early time in the business when it was honesty and it was transparency and truthfulness about maybe I'm not where I need to be, but I have resourcefulness and I'm going to work together. I'm going to listen to these other people, right? We said that first. And now second, we say, well, there's a humility. I'm not first, right? Leaders eat last. So a humility, is that not correlate right there with honesty, transparency, taking action, resourcefulness? Now we know, right? The leader is going to pioneer the way because we don't ask you to go somewhere we've never been ourselves. And then always, man, I loved. So one of our mentors, Chris Derry, who we've had on the podcast, who's introduced Lindsay and I to DISC, you know, 10 years ago, the DISC language. He was an old Edward Jones guy when he first got into sales. He built the Western Kentucky sales program. He's always taught me the platinum rule of sales. Scotty, I know you're born with the lip brought up on the golden rule. Well, we've got the platinum rule of sales. Haven't heard that.
Neither. Yeah.
Do unto others as they want done to themselves. And guess what? If you don't listen, you don't use the two ears that God gave you, you never know what they want done to themselves. So again, it's like the principles are the same, you know, now living those principles out, become the hard part, you know, very, very difficult. Like you say, still today, it's a work in progress. None of us were born perfect. I want to change gears and bring us to where we're at today. Cause I mean, what we all, I think, love and what we're living and that we've been blessed to be put in the middle of, you know, when I look at your bio and think you moved into AmeriLife in 19, and I think about Lindsay and I following along shortly thereafter in 21, we've been there kind of at an early stage, I guess you could say now, of this amazing AmeriLife journey and what's happened over the last, I guess, since for you, 5-6 years, for us, the last 4. I, again, being me, I want to get the real story. I want the real talk. I want a couple of the challenges, maybe something that you've been brought to you as a challenge, that being put in that role and seeing where we're at today as AmeriLife versus where I'm sure we were in 19 before Lindsay and I were here. You don't get there. We say you don't have the greatness without a few obstacles that you've overcame. And I just like to hear a little bit about your early steps with AmeriLife and maybe some of the things that we struggle with or we had to change, overcome. How'd that go?
Yeah, no, it's look, first off, to your point, I was very blessed and fortunate to step into a good situation, you know, at the right time. And that's God's providence on my life. And I'm just super thankful to be here. And, you know, I stepped into a great situation. AmeriLife had already been around for some 50 years. Mm-hmm. And I had a solid foundation, incredible culture, awesome people, obviously incredible leadership with Scott Perry, which was attractive to me to join as a result. And I would say from a challenge perspective, when you think about AmeriLife, it's a very dynamic organization. We have grown rapidly. I mean, that would be a gross understatement. Mm-hmm. When I got here in 2019, it was pre-COVID. We were on the early cusp of our acquisition strategy. We were a smaller, more nimble organization at the time. We were all in the office here in Clearwater. Everyone knew each other. It was relatively easy, you know, at the time to keep your thumb on the pulse of the organization. So 6 years later, it is markedly a different story.
Yeah.
We have, you know, over 5,000 employees, We are comprised of over 130 affiliate organizations. You know, we have multiple locations throughout the United States. COVID has vastly altered the way that we conduct business. If you think about it, we are operating in a hybrid slash remote type environment. And in order to be successful in our environment, I think you have to be very organized, very disciplined, and communicate at a super high level.
Yeah.
And so the organization piece is critical when you consider how, you know, ever changing we are, starting with your structure, your personnel, roles and responsibilities therein. People need to know what is expected of them every single day and why their role is meaningful to the collective enterprise. It's important that we promote a culture of trust and transparency, kind of like we were talking about. People have to depend on each other. And that starts with leaders assembling the right people and getting them into their right roles that leverage their skill sets to flourish and excel. They have to equip them with the resources they need to be effective and then empower them to get their jobs done. So when you think about growing at this rapid pace, these are some fundamentals, you know, of business that we really have to hone in on. We can't lose sight of the blocking and tackling that got us to the proverbial dance. Mm-hmm. And then from a strategic point of view, I think when you think about the challenges being private equity backed, you know, the decisions have to be, take action, be decision oriented, like I talked about, but we have to make swift, intelligent decisions that are right. You know, you don't have a lot of margin for error when you're trying to build a durable competitive advantage inside a sprint environment where we are bottom line focused. We don't apologize for that. You know, our investors have returns they're looking for. So how do you build a great culture of love inside this private equity sponsored world where it's bottom line, bottom line? Those two are at friction oftentimes with one another. And how do you build something sustainable for the future when you're dealing with limited resources, where you're having to think about opportunity costs of each decision and also be beholden to double-digit returns? That's very challenging. Now, that's also rewarding to be a part of that. It's because it's challenging. That's part of what drew me here, is it was being in that environment every day. Like, that's cool. I think we can do that, right? So I think that'd be the biggest things that I would point to. And then the other piece of it, I think, is, you know, our industry is on the cusp of serious innovation. You know, it's been ripe for disruption. We talk about that often. And so we've got to be on the forefront of that. You know, like, how are we innovating? And it has to be a collective endeavor. And by that, I mean our principles, you know, have to be a part of that. You know, we need to create, we can't lose the entrepreneurial fabric of this organization. And we have to create a culture and an incubation of innovation from the field, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, we live that, right? I mean, Lindsay and I coming from that entrepreneurial space, you know, is actually funny. We were telling Locke, our son, our 10-year-old, that we had a special guest on today. You know, we got the big ball. It was funny. We were down, I'll just say this quickly, we were down playing Trump Doral, right? For Scott Morris's, you know, Scott 40th birthday. We're down there, Trump Doral. Trump owns the place, clearly. And there's a crew. We had a special guest playing golf right behind us that day. And all day long, man, there's the grounds crew literally following our group, picking up tees, raking bunkers, doing everything. We finally asked one of the guys raking the bunker, like, what is going on? Who said, oh, the big boss is out here today. The big boss. Donald Trump was playing golf behind around there. So I told Locke this morning, we had the big boss. I said, well, he's kind of, I guess you could say, like my boss. And he's like, what? He's like, I thought you were the boss. I was like, well, yeah, you're right. Yes, we still own our business. But since we've made this wonderful partnership, and again, with God's blessing of timing, it's a different relationship that we have, right? Reaching up to the PE. And I mean, the benefits that we have certainly far outweigh any kind of restraints. But you're right. For people like us who are the principals of our firms, who built something from the ground up, and it is this baby that you've raised, that entrepreneurial side of things is very important to continue driving growth. And I feel like you all at AmeriLife have done phenomenal with that. Mm-hmm. And you may have touched on probably the most important thing. And what I've seen from the outside perspective of change is that this role that maybe Scotty Elliott yourself was in 2019, you now have your leadership team of, I'll say 15 or so people that you are utilizing to help you and work through, because we know that us as one person, we can only do so much. And most of that is going to be effective through about 8 people. So you've got to learn to work through others. And I think that is what's special. So I wanted to ask you, with all this growth, because yes, I literally had wrote down the remarkable, and I almost said unprecedented growth that we have seen at AmeriLife. What's special? What excites you? But it's the people, right? I mean, that may be obvious. Yeah. It's the people that we have that we are, and Lindsay and I have tapped into so many. You know, y'all talk earlier about synergies and diversification, and we came to this business with a one-track mind, and we sold one product, and we've quickly realized that we have a client that we are serving that is allowing 2 or 3 other industry pros like us serve us in other needs because they have them. Mm-hmm. And we need to be that person, and we've tapped into the AmeriLife resources on so many different scopes across health and wealth, and bringing all of the resource together in a beautiful way. That's been our experience. So you've, on your side of that story, what are you loving about what you see going on in AmeriLife right now?
Yeah, no, I think it's great. And I have to touch on one thing that you brought up with your, that's really cool. You know, that you're playing in front of the president of the United States. And it's another, I think,
just to prove it.
Yeah, I believe you wholeheartedly. I know he plays a lot of golf.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, but I think that there's another leadership principle that you touched on, which is, you know, this idea of submission, right? Is that, and it really ties in well with humility. We're all submissive to somebody. I mean, even Jesus, you know, was submissive to the Father. Mm-hmm. And gave us the ultimate, you know, example of servant leadership. And inside a healthy culture of humility, you know, that works well, you know, and we can't lose sight of that. And we're submissive to each other through powerful partnerships. And that's a cultural ethic here where we're all accountable to one another, to do our very best and to have, you know, to trust each other that we're going to do our job effectively, you know. And I think that, the key to our success has been our ability to marry our entrepreneurial leaders, you know, with our home office leaders that have a flair and a knack for maybe operational discipline, if you will, you know. And when we get that right, it's a really beautiful marriage, and it begets empathy and strategy. And you got to have some finesse to manage that and do it well, but it will ultimately accelerate the growth of our business by creating greater effectiveness and greater efficiencies with what we do. Now, as it relates to our future, you know, I would say the future still looks very, very bright. We are operating in a fantastic marketplace. We have an exploding, you know, populace with high demands for the solutions and the services that we bring to them. And with a diversification of our business, we are truly able to assist them from cradle to grave. And, you know, I think that's awesome. When you think about the fundamentals of our business, the future looks very, very bright. And I think that you nailed it in terms of the magic. The magic is our people. And so how do we keep everyone inspired and on mission to bring their diverse, you know, skill sets together and be unified towards a common goal. And that's where culture will be critical. And that we, and then we recognize that we, in order for us to optimize our success collectively, it's going to take all of us. And we all have a role to play in that. And so we have to buy in to the why, we have to buy into the purpose, we have to buy into the mission collectively. And that takes constant work. You know, when we talk about love, you know, loved, you know, it's, you know, in your marriage, for instance, you know, love is a choice that we make, and it's something we have to work at all the time. It's constant gardening, and but it's worth it, right? And I think that that's going to be the key to our success ongoing at AmeriLife. We've got a great vehicle to get us there. And if we can keep in mind who our distinct clients are, obviously we have the end consumer where we're bringing, you know, advice, counsel, service, solutions to them on the day. And then it's our agent and advisor and agency that we seek to serve. And, you know, we've got to make sure that we don't lose sight of that every day.
Yeah.
Constantly innovate, constantly get better and grow, and keep people bought into what we're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know that I've been extremely thankful and grateful for our partnership with AmeriLife. I mean, just when I think about the resources and, you know, Raina Reyes and Crystal Poe, and just, you know, because when you come from similar backgrounds, you can relate on common ground. And then the new verticals, they've encouraged me to go for a different more of the holistic approach. So that's been, you know, being a part of the Women's Council, that's really just opened up some new connections. Because, you know, as you said, it's grown so much in the last few years. And so having a smaller group, you're like, oh, okay, I know who that person is. And then you have these connections and network, and it makes such a large firm feel smaller that you can connect with people. So, been very grateful.
Well, you've done a tremendous job, and we've got some of the most talented women in the industry, bar none, and I believe that wholeheartedly, and it's awesome to see you guys lean in, and that goes back to a leadership principle of taking action, not sitting back waiting for, you know, things to come your way, but if we have the right kind of culture, people are taking action daily, and they're, you know, taking part in the strategy to shape favorable outcomes. And I love that you're doing that. And, yeah, I want to encourage you to continue to do that as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I love how you said, Scotty, because I feel like that from our walk, and we started out as independent insurance agents, right? And there's at some point you realize that your customer on your scale no longer is that end consumer. That the AmeriLife customer is truly these agents, these distribution channels. So I love how you just shed light of where AmeriLife's home office focus is, and that is providing a platform for the business owner, for the entrepreneur, for the sales agent, for the distributor to serve their client well, which in the end game is what rises all tides. I just want to kind of wrap up maybe on something you touched on earlier with this industry needing disruption, right? Or feeling that this industry is upon disruption. And I know the leadership we have at AmeriLife, and I have sole trust in that they are at the forefront of what that looks like. So can you talk to us about maybe, because, you know, you hear every day, some form of AI, right? AI is everywhere. AI is changing, taking jobs. You know, it's going to be birth and babies soon enough. All the above, right?
No.
Disruption. That is a disrupted world. As you think about that disruption and where AmeriLife plays in the industry that we're in, what maybe could some of those sneak peeks, like what do you visualize when you think about that and the changes to come?
Yeah, AI is a part of it for sure. And I think that it's going to be, you know, hopefully favorably disruptive, you know, not just to our industry, but across, you know, the board, if you will. And I think anytime you have a technology like that, you have to look at it through a lens of how can I leverage this technology to better enable me to provide value to my client. And I think that's got to be the objective. So when you start to think about your practice at the advisor, the agent level, and the areas where maybe you're inefficient, I think those are the opportunities where we could say, all right, if we could leverage technology, how could we create greater efficiencies? Certainly data is a big one. We've talked about, ad nauseum, and I'm thankful to know that we're on a pathway, I think, there, where we're going to get better data integration so that we have better visibility into our business so that we can make educated decisions. When you don't know what's going on, it's very difficult to make, intelligent decisions. And then moreover, it makes it challenging to strategize. And so we've got to be laying strategies every day that how are we going to continue to grow at double digit rates?
And it goes back to having faith. And, Lindsay, you talking about, how do you overcome fear? It's through faith. And it's not being ignorant, if you will. It's faith rooted in intelligence as well. It's not just this blind faith of it. It's this understanding that we bring something, to our business that is distinctly unique that I don't believe a robot is going to supplant.
Mm-hmm.
But there's certainly some processes and some things that have human touches that technology, is going to supplant and that we're going to be able to leverage to improve our business. And so I think that's got to be the mantra. Now, certainly we don't want to be naive and we got to be smart about that as well. But that's kind of how we're looking at it. And we've got, various work streams and work groups that are collaborating. And then we're, connecting with industry experts and AI experts right now to help us lay out the strategy and make sure that we're being good stewards of our monetary investments on that front.
Absolutely. And Scotty, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and pouring in to our listeners. We are very honored to have you on. We know that you're very, very busy and you've got a lot of things, but we are very thankful. But do you have any final words that you would want to share with any of our listeners today?
Yeah, well, first off, I want to reciprocate that gratitude. And I mean this sincerely. I mean, to the two of you guys, it's awesome to be your friends and to see how that you work so well together. It's really neat to see a power couple in our industry and that y'all have been able to, work together every day as a married couple. And I know that that's replete with all manner of challenges, but you're really a beacon, I think, in our industry in that way. And certainly in our own ecosystem, I just think it's awesome. And so I'm super grateful to be your partner. Super grateful that you would have me on this today. And hopefully I've said something that resonates with somebody, but y'all are an encouragement and an inspiration to me. And so I just thank you for that. And the biggest thing I would, leave our listenership with is obviously lead with love. Love is patient. Love is kind. It's not self-serving. And I think that's really the mantra of the day. And to embrace each and every day as the gift that it is. And so it's inevitably, there's people listening right now that are going through some really, really, really tough times. And I would just encourage them to try their best to get perspective as if it relates to the business, and make sure you're staying in, revisit your purpose, revisit your why, try to get grounded there. And abide in your strength zone every day. And for instance, if you're an encourager, go encourage somebody today. And that will give you fuel, right? And help you persist through the tough times.
Love that.
Yeah. Thank you, Scotty. We appreciate the words. And I think it's very clear for those who've been a part of today's show to see why we have been in love with AmeriLife, the leadership that we are here to follow, excited about the future and thankful for all that AmeriLife does for us. So for those that now have seen that from the outside perspective, do something to get a little closer to it. You see how special that is. As always, we appreciate those that are tuning in. Follow, like, subscribe, share, and be a part of this great journey. Thank you, Scotty.
Awesome. Thank the both of you. Appreciate it. Y'all have a great day.
David and Lindsay Curry are focused on high-performance coaching and sales and service. Reach out today at 502-314-2789 or visit hype.financial, that's hype.financial, to learn more. Thanks for listening to the Hype Leadership Podcast.